Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Dr. John Endres. Now, we're going to be talking about what is essentially one big subject today, which is kind of where South Africa is headed, but we're going to be breaking it down into three parts based on three different news stories. So the first one we're going to talk about, it's been in the media for a while. I think I may have made reference to it at some point recently, but I don't think we've actually discussed it on the show, and that is this rather dramatic and evolving story about a number of men who are sort of affiliated with the MK party going off to Russia, where they were recruited, they say, without their knowledge into the Russian military and are now begging to be rescued from the front lines of the invasion of Ukraine. These men claim that Duduzile Zuma Sambudla basically promised them that they were going to be doing bodyguard training in Russia. Or that there would be some, it's a bit vague. They say bodyguard training, but then they describe like sleeping out in the mountains and, you know, preparing weapons and things. So it sounds an awful lot more like military training. But anyway, they went off to Russia. They ended up going to a military training camp and they found themselves on the front line in, it sounds like Donetsk Oblast, of the war. And they have found, that it is not to their liking, and they have been begging the South African government to rescue them. Now, there's been a lot of different reporting on this. Some suggest that MK seems to have tried through a letter written by Jacob Zuma to get these guys taken away from the front line in a letter that purports to be him that was written to the Minister of Defense in Russia. It's not clear if that's genuine or if there was any Russian response to it. And there's now been a lot of anger inside MK where they have one of the people who facilitated these guys going to Russia told them that they were cowards for complaining so much. There also doesn't seem to be any plan by the South African government to take these guys off of the front lines in Russia. In videos sent to News24 via their families, three unwilling soldiers now stuck in Russian army positions near Donetsk alleged that Zuma Sambudla, whom they trusted, persuaded them to sign contracts written in Russian, which they could not understand, and which have now compelled them to fight in the war. She said she would be spending a whole year in Russia doing the same training. She told us about sleeping in the mountains with guns and grenades with her. We saw someone that we knew, know and trusted, so we decided to sign. They said that some of their comrades have disappeared and they have not heard from them again. They took us by bus. We traveled 4 to 5 hours and we were taken to Ukraine to train with the military group going up, and we were told we were going to the front lines. They were also joined by two men from Botswana and two from Ghana. They said the Botswanan and the Ghanaians were taken away in August and told they were going on a combat mission. Since then, we have never heard anything about them or from them. So, John, the question, I guess, here is, firstly, what exactly is... Oh, sorry, one more detail I forgot to mention. One of Zuma's other daughters, Zuma Mugube, has laid charges of human trafficking and violations of the Foreign Military Assistance Act against her, I think it's her half-sister, Zuma Sambudla. Saying, among those men who are requesting the South African government are 8 of my family members. So she's laid charges in the Sandton police station. John, what exactly were these MK guys doing? I mean, bodyguard training, but it sounds like they were kind of pretty easily convinced that this was going to be military training. Why is MK sending off its members to fight in a foreign war? Kind of sounds to me like this is either trying to curry favor with the Russian government to get some sort of assistance, or trying to get guys military training to pull off some sort of insurrection or coup in South Africa. What do you make of this story?
Yeah, it raises many, many questions. And I think maybe the first thing we should point out to our listeners is that it is good advice not to sign contracts that you don't understand, especially if they're in a language which you don't speak. Which commit you to things that you are unaware of.
Especially when, you've been promised that the contract is kosher by a politician, which yes. Also seems like a bad judgment call.
Exactly. So don't do that. Then secondly, I'd speculate about the motivations of the people who went. And I think, you know, they were given reasons that seemed convincing or compelling at the time. Maybe there was a sense of romanticism and adventure involved, where they'd say, you know, we're going to be playing with guns in the mountains. It's going to be awesome. It'll be revolutionary-like. We're going to have so much fun. We'll all be together. We'll have a sense of camaraderie. I and Dudu will be with you in the trenches. It's going to be awesome. And so they sign up to this, and that's what they thought they were going to get. Clearly, it is not what they did get in the end. And now they're stuck in a situation they don't want to be in. So that's, I think, the first perspective from which to look at this. The second perspective from which I'd look at it would be from that of Dudu Zambudla, and asking what her motivation was, right? So I think, firstly, one can say if what is reported here is true, I believe the technical term is it's a dick move. I mean, really, are you going to persuade poor chumps who don't know what they're signing to sign up for a year of fighting a war in a foreign country where they don't even speak the language? I mean, that is really bad. If this is true, wow, seriously. So it's not great. And I don't think it speaks well of her if she really did this. But why did she do it? And you know, one motivation could be money, right? So you sell some soldiers to the Russians, get some cash, what's not to like? Or, as you say, there could be political motivation. So in other words, is this preparing her troops for some sort of military violent action? Do you want to have, are you looking to create battle-hardened troops who are going to fight at your side as you overthrow the government or something like that? Who knows? I mean, we don't know what her reasons were, but the entire situation is very troubling, I would say. This really doesn't smell good, this story. Nick?
Yeah, it doesn't really matter which of these reasons, in a sense it is. We just know that this is, whatever it is, it's bad.
Yeah.
And the question is, how bad?
Yes, exactly. And what would be the sort of the most good faith, benign explanation you could find for this? So assuming that the reporting is accurate, how do you explain this? Do you say, well, the guys were unemployed, we were trying to, you know, find a way to get them some sort of job, train them up for a future career in law enforcement or the military, and out of the goodness of our hearts, you know, we got them these contracts, they should be grateful? Maybe. I think it's a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, you know, I don't know how useful for law enforcement hiding in a farmhouse from Ukrainian FPV drones is going to be for your future career prospects, but you know, maybe I just don't understand these things very well.
Exactly, but it's kind of hard to think of a good explanation that doesn't smell fishy.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I mean, firstly, you know, South Africa has all these strict rules about serving in foreign militaries and, you know, being mercenaries. And every now and again, the government has raged about, you know, like some sort of former SADF South African soldier going off to fight in some war in Africa. And, you know, we've got all these laws to prevent that. I mean, this clearly seems like a violation of that stuff, right? So at the very least, there should be investigations into it from the government side there. But also it's just, you know, it seems like, and recently Zuma was in Burkina Faso, for unknown reasons, one wonders, you know, to what degree, MK is trying very aggressively to run its own foreign policy.
Well, that's another question. Do we think that the party was aware of this? So was this Dudu Zuma sort of going off on her own doing this, or was this with the blessings of Party HQ? Was it with the blessings of Jacob Zuma? We don't know. If it was with the knowledge of the party, then it makes it look even worse.
Indeed. And I suspect he was probably told at some point, because he seems to have knowledge of most things. And when he doesn't, when he's not in the loop, he gets very upset and acts very decisively, very quickly. You know, when Colleen Makabule was removed as the chief whip of MK, apparently this was without his blessing, he was very quick to return to the country and rectify things. So yeah, it's difficult to imagine that this did not happen with his blessing, considering how much power he has over the party. At the same time, there's been an ominous development. A person was killed in Soweto over the weekend when there was a clash between members of the MK party and the IFP around a hostel. This is a very old story, unfortunately. In the 90s, of course, the country, particularly Soweto, was, you know, really ravaged by this horrible violence centered around hostels and the townships and the fighting between IFP and ANC supporters. Apparently, MK was trying to do some sort of rally at a hostel, and what was described by MK as a hostel in Duna tried to cut the power. Then one of the MK members laid charges against this guy, and then when he got home, he was shot dead. And that seems to be what. You know, we don't know for sure that it was an IFP member, but it's the MK is certainly blaming the IFP, and it is obviously not great. John, how do you think this sort of fits into the picture here? MK, I mean, maybe this is why they were trying to go to military training.
Maybe. And yeah, as you said, you know, it evokes memories of bad times in South African history. And there was a lot of violence between the ANC and IFP in the run-up to the 1994 election. Lots of people got killed, and there was also a lot of violence in the hostels, you know, where some hostels were Zulu-dominated in the Gauteng area. There was lots of conflict between those hostels and ANC supporters. So this is not a very nice memory to go back to. I do wonder, however, whether this doesn't cut both ways. So I've been having reports about MK using intimidation tactics in various constituencies and local government, you know, trying to get their candidates to be accepted and to intimidate the opposition candidates from standing in elections or from being active. And so MK, I'm not sure, is entirely innocent of intimidation tactics. Though, of course, it is to be regressed.
According to MK, their former leader in Mpumalanga plotted to assassinate another member of the party. So yeah. This is not terribly surprising news. Okay, so all that in mind that we've just talked about with MK, DA Federal Chairperson Helen Ziller was recently giving an interview, and she gave it to, I think it was Bloomberg, where she made this comment: "I'm not confident that the government of national unity will last until 2029. There's got to be a change of ANC leadership before then in 2027, and there are a whole lot of people in the ANC who don't want it to last. The idea is that the ANC will break the alliance with the DA and sign up with either the EFF or the MK. And John, I guess it's worth speculating a little bit on what exactly this would mean for the country. If the GNU breaks down, who is the ANC going to coalition with? We've just talked about how MK is a chaotic, swarming nightmare of mess and dodgy stuff. It seems to me like the ANC would be much keener on getting into bed with the EFF, which is currently in a weak position and needs, you know, maybe a little bit of a boost to itself. And that'll give the ANC and the EFF, I think, 198 seats in parliament. You need, 201 for a majority. So then any of their other GNU coalition partners, the PAC, Rise Mzansi, the Patriotic Alliance, Action SA, whoever, could be brought on board to make that a stable government. What do you make of that? And, you know, what's going to happen then? Is the country, are the investors going to flee? Is the bond market going to fall over? What do you think?
Yeah, I think that is what is going to happen. The ANC, I think, does have several options, right? So if it kicks the DA out, which is sort of the big change that I think could happen, it could get into coalition with the EFF or with MK or with both, or run a minority government, or I think try to bring on board some of those smaller parties like Action SA that stayed out of the GNU. So there's various ways to a majority as well as minority government that could work. But I think that all of those options are going to be relatively unstable and quite unpleasant for the ANC. So if they build a majority with lots of small parties, there will be multiple small parties that each individually can hold a gun to the ANC's head and bring down the government anytime they choose. So it's going to be very awkward governing that way. You know, you can just imagine the kinds of concessions that will be extracted from the ANC on this basis. I think if they work with MK, you know, having seen how they've operated over the past year, internally very chaotic, sort of ruled by Jacob Zuma, I think, but with an unbelievable turnover of leadership as well as MPs. Maybe the ANC could work with those people, but I think it's not going to be easy. And lastly, I think if they work with the EFF, as you've pointed out, they've recently weakened, and that maybe makes them the likeliest prospect, because it's the EFF that would seek its salvation in the arms of the ANC, while the ANC does the same with the EFF. But I think, as we've said before on this show, it is almost like pirates trying to capture a sinking ship, and that is not a great prospect. So if these two parties look ahead to 2029, working together, ANC plus EFF, is that going to boost their prospects or worsen them? I would put my money on it making their prospects worse.
So let's say we get an EFF, ANC, I don't know, PAC government for, what, 2 years from 2027 to 2029. What will that, I mean, obviously it's far out, right? But what do we think that will actually do to South Africa? I mean, you know, should South Africans be digging bomb shelters, buying canned food and storing gold? I mean, you know, will the country come through? Because presumably the EFF will make a big song and dance about demanding some sort of insane, ridiculous policy concession. Like, you know, it's not just enough that we've weakened property rights, it's that we must abolish property rights or something, you know, completely wacky. Is that likely? And if so, what will be the reaction from the markets, do you think?
No, I think the market reaction, I think, would be quite negative. And that is true probably even if these two parties decided to try to be sensible and not to do too many crazy things. But I think the expectation is really loaded against them in the sense that if already the United States thinks that, you know, South Africa is run by a left-wing bunch of racial nationalists, it probably thinks that the DA is a slight countervailing force to that, sort of keeping a bit of sense within the government. If that departs and is replaced with a more radical party like the EFF, I'm pretty sure that the Americans are going to look at South Africa far more critically. Most investors, hard-nosed investors who are, you know, having to invest their own money or their investors' money, are also going to be worried about it. And so what I would expect to see happening, even if, you know, large-scale expropriations didn't start on day one, is for the currency to weaken, for bond yields to go up, for country risk to go up, and for a whole bunch of people to get very nervous about the prospects of the country.
Although I think electorally that would be extremely damaging for the ANC and the EFF. I mean, if you look at the sort of dry run for that, it's the city of Johannesburg, where that's exactly been the coalition in power. And oh boy, that has not gone well for kind of anyone involved. I mean, it's going to be very interesting to see, obviously, in the next local government elections. But I suspect both the ANC and the EFF are probably going to take a bit of a hammering. I mean, maybe the EFF will hang on better than the ANC, but the ANC, I think, is going to really take a bludgeoning.
So I think we have to sort of just positive follow-up to that, Nicholas, which is the question of whether an ANC-EFF government would allow for free and fair elections. So they might realize the predicament they're in, you know, going down in the polls, believing that the polls are accurate, and then deciding not to expose themselves to the voters' judgment and rather making sure that they win rather than, you know, campaigning to win.
So generally, in my opinion, the best time if you're trying to steal an election and entrench an autocracy is to do it when you're at the height of your power, not at the bottom of your power. And so I think, you know, while we definitely can't count out a scenario like that, I think the capacity of those parties to sort of successfully pull it off will be quite difficult, particularly if the opposition is well organized. And I think it'll be quite obvious ahead of time that such a thing is going to happen.
Yes. And what would the response be, say, of big business as well, right? So is big business just going to stand by and watch it, see it happen? Or would they become more active, more engaged, place pressure on political actors to not go crazy?
Right. There would be sort of three components to the resistance to an attempt to steal an election. There would be business in the markets. There would be popular support or popular outrage. And then there would be foreign governments.
Mm-hmm.
South Africa has made itself, has done its absolute best over the past few years to make itself some enemies in the West. So, you know, there's your potential foreign support for opposition parties. South Africans are generally pretty okay with rioting and protesting. We do it a lot. There are service delivery protests all the time. There are stonings, yeah. There are riots, all sorts of things. So that's something that could very easily flare up, and we know that the police can struggle to deal with that. And then, of course, the business community is already feeling sort of battered and miserable, and after 2 years of an ANC-EFF government, they would also be in a bad way. So that's not a great hand already to try and go in to steal election. It's not impossible, especially if you have foreign support, maybe from China or Russia. But it doesn't seem like a great hand to play.
Yes. And so it may turn out that the DA does stay in the GNU. Maybe the GNU does last all the way to 2029, given the alternatives.
Right. But I think this is all a reminder that while things are very much changing in our country, we still don't know necessarily whether they're going towards the good or the bad. And it's up to us, I think, to make sure that they go to the good and not the bad.
That's right.
Last piece of this, which is connected, I think, to all of this, is that the United States in the Senate has tabled a new bill to renew AGOA. This is the African Growth and Opportunities Act, which is meant to allow basically tariff reductions for countries in Africa to help develop their economies and spread American influence. So it's supposed to be a sort of a win-win. South Africa has benefited from this until the Trump tariffs came in, which effectively pretty much finished off AGOA in a lot of ways. AGOA was set to expire and is up for renewal. And the new draft of the AGOA renewal specifically excludes South Africa. Now, this thing isn't law and it isn't gone through the final process yet, but considering the US just generally seems to not be too keen on South Africa right now. And this is, while I think this is mainly being driven by the Trump administration, there are, you know, Senate Republicans, House Republicans, and even a few Democrats who are not too keen on South Africa at the moment either, for a number of reasons, one of which being the International Criminal Court case against Israel. But John, I mean, what do you make of this? I think it's very unlikely we're going to ever get back into AGOA, or at least not under the current government.
Yeah, I mean, so I was in the US last 2 weeks, and some of the people I spoke to, I think, did make it quite clear that they would like to see South Africa being wildly successful. It's not that they, you know, they want us to go down in flames or they're trying to harm us. They want pretty much what we want at the IRR. We want an investment frenzy for South Africa. We want this place to boom. We want the economy to shoot the lights out. And the Americans want that as well. But their assessment of the situation is that there's no chance of getting that result if we have anti-growth policies. You know, if we're undermining property rights, like with the Expropriation Act, and we've got race-based laws, and we are antagonizing the United States internationally, we're not dealing with the crime problem. We're allowing political polarization, as expressed in the Kool de Boer song, to proliferate. None of those are conducive conditions for rapid economic growth. And so I think there's absolutely the chance to fix the relationship. I think there's absolutely the chance for us to get AGOA benefits or similar trade benefits. But it really is up to us. And I think as long as we remain intransigent on these key issues that the Americans are telling us matter to them, for that time, we're not going to progress in the relationship.
All right. With that, we're out of time. So thank you very much, everyone, for listening today. We hope you found the show interesting. And we'll see you soon on The Daily Friend Show tomorrow. Bye-bye. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.